At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org, and by Cargill, collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at cargillcreates.com. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There are plenty of things about the economy that are perplexing. Why are gas prices going up while growth is slowing? Why is mortgage interest higher while the Fed's cutting rates? And why, oh why, can't anybody fix foreclosures? Well, get used to not knowing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill. Collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at cargillcreates.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Lenovo, official computer partner of the Olympic Games. Lenovo dedicates 1% of income to support entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, the 22nd of February today. Good to have you here, everybody. Let's take those three things I started with in order, just to give us a sense of what's really going on. As we told you earlier this week, stagflation is the economic buzzword. Consumer prices are rising even as the economy slows. That puts the Fed between a rock and interest rate cuts. Speaking of those cuts, we learned this morning 30-year mortgage rates are going up, not down. They're back over 6% this week. That news came from the government-sponsored mortgage giant Freddie Mac, which got some bad news of its own. Merrill Lynch suggested today the worst is yet to come for Freddie and its sister company, Fannie Mae. Analysts predicted fourth-quarter losses and more trouble in the mortgage industry. It's not like nobody's paying attention to rising foreclosure rates. The White House has trotted out a couple of rescue plans. Congress is said to be working on one, too. But nothing has worked yet. We've called Sharon Price at the National Housing Conference in Washington to find out why that's the case and what a possible solution might eventually look like. Ms. Price, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about the first three or four things that might be reasonably expected to work to get the mortgage crisis somewhat closer to a resolution. If you could make something up, what would it be?
Well, I think that it has to be a multi-pronged answer. There's not going to be one thing that saves this situation. I think you're going to have some sort of mortgage freeze with borrowers who are in trouble, either subprime borrowers or prime borrowers. And then on the other side, there are a lot of neighborhoods that are hurting really badly right now.
Let me throw a loaded phrase out at you for a second. There is talk, it's very subliminal now, I suppose, at the moment, but there's talk about a government bailout, the government coming in, buying up some of these mortgages and refinancing them into fixed rate, more sustainable mortgages. Do you think that's something that we need to be doing now?
First of all, bailout, everyone is afraid of that term. Mm-hmm. I think it harkens back to the 80s and the savings and loans. But right now, folks are in trouble. The government needs to get involved. The question is, should they be buying the loans? You know, FHA is there when the market doesn't work. it's supposed to fill in those holes.
Let's remind everybody in 20 seconds or less what the FHA actually is.
It's the Federal Housing Administration, and it runs somewhat like the Fannie and Freddie's, but they have interest rates that are low for borrowers who are below a certain income. So it's a fairly flexible program. When the subprime market was really hot, people were not using FHA, but now that that has died away, there's a lot of room for it to come in and be a good, strong program again like it can be.
The White House has come out a couple of times in the last 3 or 4 months, first of all with Project Hope Now, and then more recently with Operation Lifeline, I think it's called. What about that aspect, trying to let the private sector work it out first?
Well, I do think that everyone is trying to do something right now, the senators, the congressmen, the White House, and the private sector. I guess there are some opportunities, you know, the counseling piece that Hope Now has done and getting $180 million out there for folks to do outreach, that's wonderful, and the private market's been behind that in large measure. But I think that if now is not the time for the government to get involved, I'm not sure when would be.
Let's get down to brass tacks, though. You're in Washington. There's obviously going to be politics involved in this. What is a politically palatable solution to the foreclosure mess finally going to look like?
That's a good question. I wish I had a good answer to it. I think that there are going to be some things that are hard to swallow, but saving people from losing their homes is sort of the key piece, because once they lose their home, their credit has been ruined. Even getting a rental apartment might be problematic, especially in markets where rents are going up high. And then also being able to buy up properties and getting some money out there to do that is going to be key. And that's going to have to come from a government side. And in some cases, states are the ones that are really struggling. So trying to help individual homeowners is also going to help communities.
Sharon Price is the Director of Policy at the National Housing Conference in Washington. Ms. Price, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Let's take a half a turn away from mortgages and foreclosures here for a second. There was news this afternoon about bond insurers, and it was good news for a change. Bond insurers have been coming up empty as mortgage-backed securities have defaulted. AmBac, one of two big mortgage companies doing what's called monoline insurance, said today it's expecting a bailout sometime next week, maybe $2 to $3 billion worth. This past summer, the Bush administration launched a crackdown on illegal immigration, everything from increased security at the borders to keeping a closer eye on employers. Today, the White House tightened up even more. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and Attorney General Michael Mukasey announced higher fines for companies that knowingly hire illegal immigrants. It's a 25% boost, the first increase in fines in nearly a decade. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports from the America's Desk at WLRN.
Employers who repeatedly hire undocumented workers could be fined up to $16,000 per worker. That's a $5,000 increase.
They could be $1 billion for each violation, but if no one's ever fined, then it doesn't matter what they are.
That's Mark Krikorian with the Center for Immigration Studies, a group that seeks to reduce immigration to the U.S.
Through most of the Bush administration, issuance of these fines essentially stopped. In 2004, only three employers in the entire United States were fined for hiring illegal aliens. Three.
He says enforcement has increased slightly since then, but it's not systematic. Tamar Jacoby is with Immigration Works USA, which promotes comprehensive reform. She says the basic problem is that the U.S. economy needs 50% more workers than current quotas allow.
It's a little bit like trying to enforce a 500-calorie-a-day diet. Very hard to enforce and often very painful for the dieter.
John, who asked us not to use his last name, runs a vegetable farm that relies on immigrant labor. He says he's more worried about having enough field hands than getting fined.
Fertilizer prices have literally doubled since last year. Fuel prices are up dramatically. And then if we can't harvest the crop, I'm concerned about the food supply and the cost of food this year.
Next season, he says he'll plant more crops that can be harvested by machine. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Just in time for the weekend, we've got some light reading for you. About 30,000 pages or so of technical documentation, courtesy of our friends up at Microsoft. It might not be something you especially want to dig into, but plenty of others will, because for the world's biggest software company to publish what they've kept secret for so many years is a very big deal indeed. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli explains what's behind the big reveal.
Used to be if you wanted a peek behind the curtain of Microsoft software, you'd have to pony up cash. Companies that wanted to do that bought pricey licenses and did formal deals. But in the age of the internet, those kinds of alliances are old news. These days, Microsoft gets that a spirit of openness prevails. Jim Zemlin is executive director of the Linux Foundation.
They are reacting to greater market forces, which are tumbling upon them. They're seeing their customers demand that Microsoft systems work with the other systems that they're using.
Now, open source isn't anything new. For Microsoft to get into it now is a bit like someone saying today, hey, have you seen this newfangled thing called an ATM? Mike Gilpin's an analyst with Forrester Research. He says there's a new guard at Microsoft. They realize if the company wants to keep dominating technology, it needs to dominate the web.
The way that the internet plays out in terms of business strategy has continued to change. And Microsoft wants to participate in this latest community-oriented phase of the growth of the internet.
Growing, like Facebook and Google, means Microsoft has to open its bag of tricks and let anyone who wants to innovate. It's no accident that Microsoft's taking the wraps off its software now. It's still under the microscope in Europe. Regulators there aren't happy with the stranglehold the software giant has on the desktop. And with its offer to buy Yahoo still on the table, it can't hurt for Microsoft to open up. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
We don't hear about it much anymore, but Enron continues to work its way through the justice system. Three British bankers were sentenced today to 3 years and a month in jail for their part in Enron-related fraud. They worked with former Enron chief financial officer Andrew Fastow to steal more than $7 million. They'll have to pay all of that back in addition to the jail time. Investors looked like they were headed for the poorhouse today, but then they turned it around. We'll have the details and we'll place a call to Dallas when we do the numbers. Whether or not we're actually in a recession yet is still anybody's guess, but Nissan CEO Carlos Ghosn said today Detroit is already there. Ghosn runs Renault, too, out of France, so you got to figure he knows what he's talking about. On the bright side, he did say he thinks whatever recession the U.S. auto industry is in will be a short one. As they try to turn themselves around, all three American car makers have offered buyouts to virtually every hourly worker they have, $100,000, to just walk away. Sounds tempting, but Dustin Dwyer reports from Michigan Radio it's more complicated when you're not sure what comes next.
Steve Manassi has assembled engines for Chrysler for 10 years. He was one of 14,000 employees Chrysler offered buyouts to, but like a lot of his coworkers, he turned it down. Talking outside a convenience store near his plant on Detroit's east side, Manassi says his reasons were mostly economic. For one thing, $100,000 doesn't go as far as it used to, particularly once you factor in taxes.
If they offer you a $100,000 buyout package, you're probably going to get about $65,000 cash to do something with it, you know, to make a move. And if you don't make a move, you try to live on that money, it'll be spent in a year, like very easily.
Another problem is Manassi wasn't sure he could get another job in Michigan's depressed economy. He considered jobs in other states, further south, where the auto industry is actually expanding, but then he'd have to figure out how to sell his house.
I have three houses on my block that are in foreclosure. There's houses for sale all over my where I live, and nothing's selling right now. They've been on the market for almost 2 years. It's just the market's crashed.
There's a bit of a catch-22 here. Manassi essentially couldn't accept the buyout from Chrysler because Michigan's economy is so lousy, and that's largely because of the struggling auto industry. But the automakers say they need the buyouts to get back on track and stem the flow of red ink pouring out of their North American operations. The deadline for most Chrysler buyouts was Monday, but the company says it won't announce the number of people who took the offer for several weeks. In the meantime, Ford and GM are still dangling their offers to nearly 130,000 employees. The goal is to convince workers with fixed pay and benefits to leave and then replace them with new workers that'll make about half as much money. That new tier of lower-paid employees was a key provision of labor contracts signed by all three automakers last year. Steve Burgess has worked at Ford for 34 years and is eligible for retirement. He's exactly the kind of employee Ford hopes will take the buyout. But Burgess isn't interested.
I'm just not ready. I'm, 55 years old, good health. And why have to wait on a check when I can, you know, work every day?
Talking outside Ford's Rawsonville plant on his lunch break, Burgess says if he left now, he'd get a pension check every month and keep his health care coverage. He'd also receive a $35,000 retirement bonus. But Burgess says his hourly wages, boosted by as much overtime as he can get, earn him about $100,000 a year. And that's tough to give up. That seems to be the attitude of a lot of people in his plant. And that could be bad news for Ford. Michael Robinette is an auto industry analyst for CSM Worldwide. He says even if most workers turn down the buyout offer, Ford, GM, and Chrysler could still see savings.
I don't know if they're going to get everything that they're looking for. But what I do think is that, they're going to get some performance out of this. I mean, there's not just a couple of hundred people that are going to take these.
This is the second time the automakers have offered widespread buyouts since 2006. More than 80,000 workers left in the last round. Robinette expects the numbers to be lower this time. He says more buyout offers could be on the way in the years to come. But Steve Burgess at Ford says he won't be waiting around for a bag of cash to decide when he should retire.
I'll work for my money. I don't want no handout. You know, when I'm ready to go, then I'll go.
In Ann Arbor, Michigan, I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Mr. Johnson, you pulled one out today.
Never in doubt.
We you're so full of baloney.
Well, look, it was only down 150 points. All the New Yorkers had gone home because it was snowing like crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, there was never any doubt. No.
But then in the last hour, lo and behold, bond insurers save you.
Yeah, I know. Well, or at least the rumor. This is, and it just shows you how starved for good news we are. This story came out that AmBank, which is one of the big bond insurers, so you can, you know, municipalities and issuers can buy a AAA rating on their bonds, that they may get bailed out by a bunch of financial institutions. It may not come till Monday or Tuesday, but the sense is it's going to come. And we desperately need some kind of good news for this credit market, because this credit market is just in terrible shape.
Well, let me give you a general sense, not just of the credit market, but kind of this whole week was just very blah, you know?
Yeah, it was. It was light volume, and you know, it kind of bounced back and forth. It was only a four-day week, but it seemed like a 7 or 8 day week. But nobody really wanted to do anything. Considering the state of the credit market, and as bad as it is, I guess I'm really pleasantly surprised that the stock market's held up as well as it has. But I think this market was looking around for something to bail it out. And this could be the trick. I really had written sort of a list of things that could break us out one way or another out of the doldrums. And this one, you know, a bailout of these bond insurers has been pending for a long time. It looked like Warren Buffett was going to ride to the rescue and everything else. But anything to just stabilize things and give... It goes back to what we were talking last week. Just give somebody some sense that, you know, if they loan somebody money, they're going to get it back.
Yeah, but if we had been having this conversation like noontime in New York, you know, the market was breaking sort of out of that trading range it's been in on the downside, not on the upside.
Yeah, exactly. And we figured we had to break out some way because this thing had just come to a point where it was going to go one way or another. But there's a lot of money on the sideline that wants to get to work, Kai. So that's one thing to consider. The other thing is there are a lot of people who have bet that the stock market's going to go down. And when you have any sort of an outbreak of good news, they have to rush in and buy back all those stocks they've been selling. So we had a bunch of short covering today. Mm-hmm. We've gotten a reprieve, at least for the weekend, away from, you know, the credit quality and our lack of credit quality and the impending, you know, recession and stagflation, which the Wall Street Journal had the gall to put on the front page of the paper. I mean, that's an obscene word. But anyway, we've gotten a reprieve. Now let's just hope they can deliver this bailout.
And if it doesn't come, what happens?
Then we go straight back down again.
Oh, there you go. All right, just checking. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David.
I think you've got all the rules figured out.
Yes,
now.
I do. Yes, I've been doing this a while, you know. Coming up, scoring big breaks on blockbusters abroad.
That includes points for things like whether the story is set in the UK, whether the characters, not the actors, but the characters are British, and whether the subject matter or underlying material is British.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials picked up 0.7% today, 96 points to close at 12,381. The NASDAQ inched up 0.1%, 3 points to close at 2303. The S&P 500 climbed 0.4%, 5 points, ended the day at 1348. For the week, the Dow moved up 0.25%. The NASDAQ slipped 0.75%. The S&P 500 gained 0.25%. Ambac took a wild ride today on news of that rescue plan. Its shares were down as much as 11% mid-session, rebounded to close up 16%. Analysts downgraded big mortgage firms Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as we said, and investors did just that. They sold. Fannie Mae gave back 1%. Freddie Mac tumbled more than 4%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. By Siemens, from strengthened urban infrastructures to sustainable environmental solutions to advanced healthcare technology, Siemens' 70,000 U.S. employees are providing solutions for America. And by the American Public Transportation Association, working toward energy independence with 10 billion transit trips per year at publictransportation.org. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Monday. The National Association of Realtors reports on sales of existing homes for the month of January. It's America Saves Week. Organizations around the country encourage individuals to look at their savings habits and take action to build wealth, not debt. The personal savings rate of Americans is near zero. And on February 25, 1836, inventor Samuel Colt patented his revolver. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The Democratic Republic of Congo wants some big mining companies to dig deeper into their own pockets. The African nation is demanding new contracts from BHP Billiton, the world's largest miner, and De Beers, which sells almost half the world's rough diamonds. All the companies will say is that they're in ongoing negotiations with the government of Congo. But they may have no choice, because Marketplace's Bob Moon reports more and more countries have been throwing out deals they've made with foreign companies.
You've got to figure there's a phrase that translates into any language on the planet.
Show me the money.
In fact, something of a trend seems to be developing when it comes to governments making that very demand, seeking better terms once they've seen foreign investors hit pay dirt.
You saw it with the Russian government over the last few years. You're seeing it with several governments in South America. Venezuela has taken something of a leadership role here under Hugo Chavez. And now, apparently, with governments like Congo.
William Dodge is a professor of international law at the University of California's Hastings College. He says the success of some countries in rewriting mineral rights and other lucrative deals seems to be giving others the same idea.
I think it's easier to do it if other people are doing it too, and you can point to other countries that have asked for it and to other companies that have, in the end, agreed.
Villanova Law professor John Gotanda suggests rising prices for commodities around the globe are also fueling the trend.
As the marketplace fluctuates greatly, it changes the economic structure of the contract. And when that changes, parties are more likely to then seek renegotiation. And that's probably why we're seeing it more.
In other words, the pie is a lot bigger than we thought, so we want a bigger slice. But Professor Dodge at UC Hastings says the companies can argue the flip side.
We took a lot of risk up front, and we invested a lot of money. And if it hadn't turned out that there was oil in this place or copper in this place, we'd be out that money.
Dodge says companies can demand their host countries live up to the bargains they made and, in some cases, international treaties. In the end, though, the foreign governments often have the leverage.
The company can't just pick up and move the copper mine or the oil well.
The countries do need to consider their own reputations, though. Dodge says they could discourage other companies from investing in the future. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Having been saved from the writer's strike, the Oscars will go ahead as scheduled on Sunday. One of the Best Picture nominees this year is the British World War II romance Atonement. Defining what makes a film British isn't always easy, but Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from London. Sometimes a little bit goes a long way.
The Bourne Ultimatum looks like an American movie. Made by a Hollywood studio, it stars Matt Damon as a CIA man on the run. But as far as the UK tax man is concerned, this is a British film.
Waterloo Station, south entrance, 30 minutes. Come along.
And there you have it. One of the scenes is set in London's Waterloo Station. And a British journalist is assassinated. That helped make this movie sufficiently British to qualify for a generous tax break. Alison Small of the UK Film Council says The Bourne Ultimatum passed the British culture test.
That includes points for things like whether the story is set in the UK, whether the characters, not the actors, but the characters are British, and whether the subject matter or underlying material is British, for example.
Here's an even more bizarre example of a British movie.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Dark Knight, the latest Batman film, was also deemed sufficiently British to attract tax relief. Large chunks of it were shot in the UK, London masquerading as Gotham City. Passing the cultural test to get the tax break is pretty easy. Ben Fenton of the Financial Times says that's because it's really designed to boost the British film industry, a major earner for the UK.
It contributes something like just under $8 billion to the UK economy every year, and there are more than 35,000 people employed directly and indirectly in the film industry. So there's a sensible reason for giving this kind of support to it.
Cynics suggest that the culturally British test is a fig leaf, hiding the fact that this is just another subsidy. The big American studios are the main beneficiaries. They make by far the most expensive movies in Britain, says Terry Eilert of the Film Business Academy.
Most big American films, the majority of big budget American films, especially those with a large special effects element and high level production design and high level production values, are made in the UK.
He says movies are never quite what they seem, especially when it comes to British and American films. The British and American movie industries are so entwined, it can be difficult to say whether some movies are British or American. This art film, Becoming Jane, seemed 100% British, telling the story of that quintessentially English writer, Jane Austen.
The ball is an indispensable blessing to the juvenile part of the neighbourhood. Everything agreeable in the way of talking and sitting down together are all managed with the utmost decorum.
The actress playing Jane? American, Anne Hathaway. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. And by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note to send you on your way this Friday afternoon. You know, everybody needs to get away sometimes, even mortgage bankers and even the ones at Countrywide, the lender that's been losing money hand over fist. The Wall Street Journal reports today the company is hosting a ski excursion in Avon, Colorado this weekend. 30 guests from various other mortgage banks will be treated to dinner in nearby Vail and 3 nights at the Ritz-Carlton Bachelor Gulch Resort. Pretty posh, I imagine, because room rates, they start at $750 a night for a weeknight. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow added 96 points, 7 tenths percent. The NASDAQ bulked up 3 points, 1 tenth percent. The S&P 500 rose 5 points. That is 4 tenths of 1%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is JJ Yore. Coming up next time on the program, French public television goes commercial free.
I think that's a good opportunity for the French TV in France to take more risks on new programs, new formats.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.